Christmas.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Box Box, the exciting show where we open a box and decide if the box rocks or if the box full of rocks.
I don't know if this is going to be a good episode.
Fucking useless shirt.
Yeah.
Sometimes in life, you have to make a choice. Sometimes in life, you have to find your voice. Sometimes in life, you need your
off the rails on a local rail car. We're off the rails on a local rail car. Yeah! Woo! We are back, better than ever. Same name, different network, kind of, sort of, but we are back. The band is back together. There's Ruby, still adorable as ever. I love baby girl. Yeah, you wiggle that tail. Across the internet for me, as always, is the handsome one. Handsome, didn't I?
Across the internet for me is clever Eric Muller. I think at this point, our whole goal is just we're going to keep on. We're going to make it more and more challenging. We're going to be such a niche podcast. We're going to be like, can you find, where's Ramble On About Movies? Like, not only do we change the time, we change the days. Thank you, Ferris. By the way, yes, this guy knows what's up. It is a great t-shirt. We're not playing that great right now, which is why we have to save them again, because geez. But we'll be somewhere. We'll be somewhere doing
That's
something.
Right.
I mean,
we're like a fine wine.
It's hard to rash.
Find, you know, we're
you
very
can't get rid of it.
Yeah.
You don't know where the rash is going to pop up next.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to symbolize what we truly are. We're just a rash on the internet.
Right. Ooh, here's a question for Eric already. Reef coming in. Did you catch Calvin Johnson's Hall of Fame speech? I did not. Okay, wait, hold on. I think we might have another costume change. This may be a multiple costume change day for Eric. I'm not exactly sure how many costumes he's going to be doing. But I guess I can just kibitz until he gets back. I can hear him. I think he's still on mic.
Did I watch it? Yes. Was I wearing this while watching it? Yes, I did. Custom Megatron jersey, baby.
All of the above. Also, thank you, Mike. Bless you. Who needs a schedule when you have Dan just tweeting, hey, we're live?
Solid schedule right there.
To be fair, this is the most notice we'll typically do before a show. When we were doing shows every week, we were a little bit more easy to set your watch to, but now it's just kind of like, hey, we have time and we have things to talk about, so let's do a show. This is probably the longest we go. We'll go a month. I think we've gone two before, but it's always there. We're at 87 fucking episodes, and that's not including like specials or rumbles that we used to do. So
yeah, all the other stuff we used to do.
And you'd think that it'd be easier.
Does this include our account community bracket?
No, because that wasn't numbered. I didn't number the brackets, right. Or I think we got like 13 rumbles, something like that. I have it somewhere on this computer.
Somewhere.
I didn't. Yeah. But anyway, how are things? How's life? You did a lot of yard work the other day, and it was very impressive.
Because when we first moved into this house 2 years ago, me and my wife, we knew nothing of gardenings or plants, but thanks to COVID, that became my wife's thing. So now we're like, okay, well, we clearly got to do something with the front garden bed because our original plan was just let God decide what lives and what dies. Minimum care from us. Sure. Just let God decide. So now we are
kill them all, let God sort them out. That's talking right. About the plants.
And for some reason, God wanted them all to live, and they were bastards to dig out last week. Yeah. But now, you know.
It's all pretty. I could, if you really want me to, I could pull the picture up, but we won't because I don't. That's a lot.
Well, it's not even done yet. That's the thing.
Yeah, no, it's an ongoing for, you know, if you love that kind of thing.
It's a process.
Say it's like grieving. The five stages of grief.
I'm grieving for all the blood, sweat, and tears that are going into this project.
All the plants that
I moved 20-pound stones by myself.
That's not a small amount.
No. Surprised the car survived.
How's it going, Jake? Welcome.
Hey, Jake. But Dan, how are things going for you, my friend?
Things are going well. Hopefully, I'll have some really exciting news a couple of days later in the week. I don't want to put too much out there or jinx it. So hopefully good news for that. Had a fun weekend seeing other friends for once and going on the Warner Brothers studio tour. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
The wife got very excited. At all. Wife got very excited because she got to see a lot of the back lots at Warner Brothers and see some of Stars Hollow and Gilmore Girls and whatnot. As I was on the tour, I'm like, I like a lot of what they're like putting out there. And it was obviously it's a very big tour and a very big lot, but it's like, mm-hmm. I'm like, and then, but then like the things they put the emphasis on, this is a funny thing I'll say here because I couldn't really say it too much at the tour yesterday, but the things they were highlighting, like when you start the tour, here's a little insider information. It started by Ellen in a theater. So Ellen basically greets you for the tour and like kind of goes over a, you know, which is,
I mean,
curious.
I mean, it's a step above Bill Cosby greeting you.
I mean, so. but that's the thing. And then you have the other things about the tour and like what they really push in the gift shop is like DC and Harry Potter. And so that's a lot of the gifts. And I was having this conversation.
I'm surprised you don't have like a rack of like HBO Max gift cards too. Oh, like, man, oh, don't forget to check these out.
Well, I was saying like you're the highlight, like, and you know, most of the people aren't kind of in the same like sphere that we are, where we talk a lot about movie news and we know a lot about these things that are happening. And it's like, but you're highlighting like Ellen, J.K. Rowling in DC, which had some Joss Whedon stuff in there too. And it's like, I'm wondering if there's a studio that's like, it was just very curious.
This opening segment was starring Ellen, directed by Josh Whedon, produced by Harvey Weinstein.
I know, God.
God, all the horrible choices were made.
On a lovely segue, yes, there was a ton of Looney Tunes stuff. I wish there was more. And honestly, I was kind of surprised that there wasn't like more Looney Tunes or more like Space Jam stuff, because it was very, you know, that's a very kid-friendly property. I guess the other stuff just sells better. I have a monochromatic coffee mug now that has the Warner Brothers logo, and on top it just says actor. So I was very excited for that. And then we got a couple of coffee mugs for Gilmore Girls, since coffee is such a large part of that show. Something we didn't put in the title, I'll try to segue, since it was Warner Brothers and Warner Brothers had a big release this past weekend. We're gonna start off doing something we don't often do. And we're going to talk a little bit of the Suicide Squad. So, Tim, hey, buddy, how are you? There was no prop house. We sat in, before I get too far, we sat in a, they had like the science of sound. I forget what the thing was called, because they had a couple of green screens where you could like ride on a witch's broom. You could ride on the bat pod from Batman or from The Dark Knight. And they like green screen those. There was no prop house, but we sat through a little presentation where they showed you how they did sound mixing. And it was from a scene in Gravity where Sandra Bullock first gets like the storm first comes and she gets knocked off the arm. And so they showed you four different times. And the first one was only dialogue. The second one was only sound effects. The third one was only score. And then they showed it to you all together. And it's like, yeah.
We mixed it together.
Especially on a movie like Gravity, where it's the soundtrack is so important because it's set in space. And like, it was just, that was a really cool little feature as well. And there was that's the other thing too, is there was a lot of Friends stuff. And I'm like, I appreciate Friends, but I'm not a huge Friends fan. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So
you weren't there for it.
No, exactly. You did that one, nice, Tim. So yeah, we are going to talk the Suicide Squad. I don't know. Do you want to try doing? I don't know if we can really do a non-spoilers review, or do you just want to go into? You want to go hard into a little bit of maybe some of this guy?
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit of this guy.
Boyfriend named Blade. Alert.
Maybe that one too.
Ooh.
And then, I literally went a little crazy. But the most appropriate one is probably this one.
That is appropriate.
So we put all those up, and anyone who's watching this back, we are going to talk spoilers on the Suicide Squad, because let's be honest, it is, available on HBO Max. So, and it's been available for 5 days now. About that, like midday on Thursday.
Thursday, yeah.
Yeah, I got to go see it in IMAX, which was really fun. Ooh. And it was a gore fest. I was trying to read this. When you stop off at the end, you can inquire, and it's up to the description of the guide. They may offer to give you more in-depth tour and just ask what you want to see. Oh, well, I mean, that would have been really convenient to know before yesterday, Tim.
And before you removed the message from chat, Tim.
Oh, I didn't see that clearly. Anyway, so the Suicide Squad, James Gunn not redoing the David Ayer film.
It's a direct sequel.
Yeah, I was going to say they didn't put a two, but there are some characters that cross over. So it's how should we even go about starting to talk about this? Because I think we should go into spoilers, but we won't do. We're not going to talk the whole plot just because. Yeah. It's fun. Let's start there. I really enjoyed it. How about you?
I enjoyed it as well. I had a blast with it. Yeah. I think if you remember back in the day, our review of the first Suicide Squad movie, sitting on the couch in my living room going, my God, why was this a thing?
So you did. And it was funny because we recorded, you could ask Sean or PJ. I don't know exactly off the top of my head, but we did a commentary for Suicide Squad from can you believe that was 5 years ago? First off,
yes, I can believe that
it was 5 years ago. So we watched it. I joined a little bit past like halfway or a little bit before halfway. So they were already like 40 minutes in. So I sat down and watched it. We recorded that. We were going to do a video to it too, like a not like ours, which is very long form, very not structured. So I had the second half of that kind of in my brain recently, but it did not get better with age. There are parts that are like, sure, that's cool and entertaining, but then it's just kind of like oof, oof. So I had very, and from everything that people were saying, very high hopes, and these expectations were met. I did a good job though, Eric. You'd be proud. I wasn't like over expecting from this, but like, yeah, I was definitely looking forward to this film, and I got to see an IMAX too on opening night, which was a lot of fun.
Nice.
And you saw it at home.
I saw it at home on HBO Max.
Sure. I mean, I was gonna watch it. I'm watching it again, and I watched like half of it last night because I was like, I'm tired. I'm gonna go to bed.
Yeah, so my wife's enjoying it, so she keeps rewatching it. So I keep, getting a chance to rewatch certain scenes.
Yeah.
There's some moments where you're like, "Oh, this is real good."
Yeah. Oh, that's a great point too, Mike. That it was the same release date, or at least the same weekend. Because I'm sure it wouldn't be like day and date. It wouldn't be like.
Yeah. No. Because I think I looked at my Facebook memories. It was like on a Saturday.
It's like the first weekend in August. I do remember that though.
Yeah, it was a Sunday. I remember that.
Because we did go see. I thought we saw it opening night.
No.
Regardless,
you but might yes, have. I did not.
Yes, Reith, that's one thing. She's still crazy consistent. Viola Davis as Amanda Waller.
I was going to say, has Viola Davis been bad in anything?
No. She has not been bad in anything. That's, yeah, we can
she's
just.
She's never been bad, and she's always the right choice.
Yes. Always. You can literally just, even for this movie, you can just like list the people and how great they were. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like Margot Robbie's still coming back. You have Idris Elba like really having a lot of fun. John Cena just getting even better. Even the smaller parts, Jai Courtney coming back. Nathan Fillion having a little bit in there too. It's nice to see Capaldi outside of Doctor Who stuff, even though he's still playing like a really brainy character.
Mm-hmm.
we just list people. And wait, is there anything like you want to highlight from the movie? I guess we're doing spoilers, but we haven't really spoiled much.
I gotta say, what I really loathe about this film is just the interaction between the characters, mm-hmm. especially Bloodsport and Peacemaker during that one sequence. If you know, you know. And then also, I mean, Stallone is King Shark.
The voice in King Shark, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, well, because I like, because again, one of my hopes with this movie is people go see Harley Quinn on HBO Max, because that series is amazing. And their King Shark is completely different than Stallone's King Shark, which gotcha. I'm happy about, because you didn't just, you know, do Control C, Control V.
Fair. No, that's totally fair. Also, you, Mike, you bring up a great point. The MVPs of the film, the Peanut Gallery working at Argus, yeah, they are a lot of fun. I don't know if I have everyone's. Steve Agee playing John Economos, I think. Tinashe Adeyemi and Jennifer Holland, all three of those actors. They just, you know, they knock it out of the park in very little amount of screen time. And like, they do a really good job. They like, I don't want to say more than that because it would be super spoilers, but it was a lot of fun. Yeah. And this is, Reef, you bring up a great point too, is like those, that is a very normal thing. Like Michael yeah. Rooker,
he's been in every James Gunn film.
Mm-hmm. And Nathan Fillion after Slither as well. Nathan Fillion was in, I don't, was he in Guardians 2? I know he was in
his one. His scene got cut.
Okay. So yeah,
he was in Guardians 1. He had a voiceover cameo. And then, yeah, he was supposed to have a bigger scene in Guardians 2, but it got cut.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, Gunn, and then his brother, you always have Sean Gunn coming in too. Which always has a lot of fun in there as well. So it's one of those things where it's like, there's a rogues gallery. Like if you're working with James Gunn and mm-hmm. you've worked with him for years. Yeah, Slither is a great horror slash dark comedy. That's a lot of fun to watch. I would say still probably holds up pretty well. I haven't seen it in a couple of years, but it's a fun watch. God, what else to say about this movie? Ratcatcher 2 was a mm-hmm. whole lot of fun. Like a surprising, like she brings so much heart to this movie. Yeah. Like,
it's her and Polka Dot Man.
Yeah, David Dashelman. So he's like, I love the more things you see him in, the better he is.
I don't know, he gets so better in every little thing. But yeah. No, I mean, this movie was fun. It's what I needed it to be. It was the better version of the first film. This was what the first film should have been to begin with. It's yeah. them getting a bunch of weird characters together, doing weird stuff, trying to solve weird stuff instead of like, we're going to get people together to beat up Superman.
You beat up Superman or to take down a dancing witch. Yep. That too.
You gotta watch out, Dan.
CGI army. The humor in this movie is so dark. It's super dark, super funny. Like you were talking about, there's such a great payoff to that one-upsmanship between Peacemaker and Bloodsport.
Like I knew where the scene was going, but I enjoyed the ride so much.
I didn't really see it coming, but oh man, the punchlines they hit so hard. They're so fun, and especially when you cut to the reaction in the control room where they're just like that they can't believe what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean,
well, I just love how also like the first 10 minutes is a fake out.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's probably the first biggest spoiler we'll do is like it's. Yeah, and it sets the tone too. I think it's good because yes. I thought about that because you get a lot of action in the very beginning and then you get a little bit more setup. So things are kind of out of order. But then there's not a whole lot of like loss and change to the cast or team, which is all fine and all well and good because then you get more stuff. It does a good job of showing that no one's safe. And then there are characters that are safe because you know what they're kind of doing. And then your post-credits scene as well, which makes a whole lot of sense given what we know that's coming down the pipeline for production for them. So, I mean, it's just so much fun. I'm in the middle of watching it again. You've probably already seen it at least twice.
Oh yeah. At least twice. It's just, I wish people would have gotten vaccinated, wore masks. Cause I could have enjoyed this in theaters, but no.
I mean, I did, and I'm in a much bigger hotbed than you, so hopefully I don't die in the next 2 weeks. But I am fully vaccinated, so that's we'll get to that. There's another news story I might pop up later on in the thing that we might get back to that. You know, we do our best to be politically neutral, but that is, we'll say now, go get vaccinated, because there's... Yeah.
And remember, mask over your nose.
Mask, yeah, exactly. Mask over your nose, go get vaccinated. It's not about you. It's about everyone. So,
but yeah, but no, Suicide Squad, very happy with it. It was exactly what it needed to be. James Gunn was the right choice to carry this. And like, I'm also glad, like, it's because I remember when we first were talking about this, we're like, oh God, he's going to just do, like, Warner Brothers is going to force him to do Guardians, but in the DC, but it wasn't, it was his own thing.
And that's kind of what I thought about it after I saw it, where it was like, you can tell in both Guardians movies, like, he's... and I'll get to your comment in a sec, Mike, but in both Guardians, it's very, you can tell he's getting to do his own thing, but still in the Marvel sandbox. You know what I mean? Like, you have to hit certain story beats. You have to introduce certain Infinity Stones and certain characters. Like, there's an overarching thing. You can tell when they handed him the Suicide Squad, they're like,
do whatever.
Cherry pick your characters, do what you can, make it a hard R, because we know the style that you like to do. And you can tell, like, it was definitely more, like somebody mentioned, we had who the hell, Reef mentioned Slither earlier on, and it's like, that this feels like if you smash together Slither and Guardians, that's kind of what you're getting in this, where you're still getting a little bit of the gross out, you're getting, like, the camera will linger, like, a little bit longer, and you're like, this is kind of uncomfortable, but that's a James Gunn thing. And yes, then the head slides off, you know what I mean?
Well, and also, again, because, again, you have James Gunn being able to have creative freedom over this. Like, John Cena said when he originally was given the role, he was going to play him like Arlie Ramey from Full Metal Jacket. Like, that's how he wanted him to be. But James was like, no, he's going to be douchey bro Captain America. And Cena went, got it.
I'm wondering if that was the only direction he got, because, like, I would love to receive that direction too, especially because, like, that's honestly one of my favorite lines he gives, where, like, they're doing that back and forth of him and Bloodsport, and he goes, unless what he's doing is dope as fuck.
Well, again, this movie also makes me up so bad because I'm a wrestling fan. It's just like, why did they let John Cena be this hardcore badass villain instead of always making him Hulk Hogan, G.I. Joe? Like, I get it. It's for the kids.
Well, yeah. And that's, but well, and like, that doesn't sell toys.
He was so good in this role. That's why I'm so excited for the series coming out.
Yeah, series is going to be great. And that's, we're entering a golden age of actors and wrestlers and all of the above. Because all wrestlers are actors, but not all actors are wrestlers. Right? Circles are square, but square is a rectangle. Yep. I don't know. So Mike asks, how did you guys feel about the non-linear storytelling? I dug it because it actually felt like I was seeing a 6-issue paperback come to life, but I get how others might not have liked it. I don't want to say it was necessarily non-linear outside of the intro happening, and then they do a flashback to like 3 days earlier.
They do it again later in the film.
Well, I mean, I feel like things are more or less happening at the same time. But one thing they do, and I like when there's a movie like, say, like Scott Pilgrim, and you can literally freeze it and you could see, oh, that would actually be in a comic book, because that's when they do the like 3 days earlier and they have it in the suds around the toilet, or like the now when it's the leaves blown on the beach. Like, I like seeing those visuals, and I feel like, because a lot of times, I don't know if they did it for this movie, but I know certain movies like Sin City. So Sin City, they did not storyboard that movie at all, and they just used the graphic novel.
Yeah.
Because it was
already done. That was a storyboard.
That was a storyboard. So I think I wouldn't necessarily, like, sometimes you have like parallel editing, which is a good idea. Or like when you think about the middle to the final act of this movie, that's what you got a lot of going on. The parallel editing between like things that are happening at the same time, when you have Harley in the city and then you have what's going on in the jungle. And then you have the third act where it's like different parts of Jotunheim. So it's, you have a little bit of non-linear, not quite as like, I know what Reef is saying. Like, it reminded a little bit of Pulp Fiction. I think Pulp Fiction has it definitely more where like they overlap, but not in the same way. This is, I think, is a little easier to follow since you only have the one storyline. Like, it's, and it's basically like when they cross over and whatnot. So I thought it was great. I thought it was pretty easy to follow, which is why it didn't even register to me as a, like, sure, it is, you're right, it is non-linear at points, but it's also not like, I don't think that's a huge crux of the movie. Does that make sense?
When they did the first one, I was actually laughing my ass off. I was like, this is, James Gunn doing what James Gunn does best. It's the whole subverting expectations. And so I was just like, oh, this is a genius move. I thought it was great.
For the first one in what?
In Suicide Squad, the first where, you know, like, you know, they're on the beach and all of a sudden you get
oh, sure.
3 days earlier. I was like,
well, and I thought about that too, because it was like, and as I was watching well, it the second
also
time,
at the same time, I'm thinking at the same right. time, I was like, this is also how exactly Amanda Waller would do this.
Amanda
like,
Waller, yeah.
Yeah, Amanda Waller would do this, like, it's seriously, Cohen, in the comics, yeah. where she was just like, no, this team's going to go here, but you're the main focus.
Mm-hmm. And I was also thinking, like, because it's such a big, they do, that's another thing James Gunn is really good at. Everyone, so it's an ensemble, this movie, yeah. and no matter what way you look at it. But everyone, even fucking Weasel, has time to shine. Yeah, like every, that's what I really like about directors who are awesome about ensembles, like Soderbergh and the Ocean's movies, like stuff like that, where it's like everybody, even if you're going to be Ryan somewhere Johnson. Off, yeah, mm-hmm. a little bit in the scene, but you're going to have a moment to shine too. Like it's...
No matter the screen time, you're going to get a moment to shine.
All right. I don't know if there were people who had us muted because we were talking. We'll say Nathan Fillion again popping up saying spoiler alert means we're done with the spoilers for Suicide Squad. But before yeah. we...
But before I'm proud we, of us. We didn't really spoil it that
We didn't
much.
Spoil much. We there are things we alluded to. I think mm-hmm. you threw out the biggest spoiler. But I'm not going to repeat it in case people yeah. didn't pay attention. Because that's how I am. Sometimes I have selective hearing and I don't hear things that are like, oh, I wouldn't bother. I did want to talk about something. I didn't send you this link, but I don't like, and I've seen other people talk about this as well, where it's like, I'll just read this headline where it says, The Suicide Squad pulls in $26.5 million for underwhelming box office debut. And I don't like, and I've seen a lot of people comment where it's like, oh, it's not doing well at the box office. Like, fuckers, we're still in a pandemic. Right. This was a day and date release. Like, and of course, it's not going to do Black Widow numbers. But like, no. it bothers me painting it with a negative brush. Go on.
Well, yeah, I hate that. But like, I get it. Like, in better times, this would be a story. We would be discussing the box yeah. office for all these movies coming out. But, you know, at the same time, you know, we are in the middle of a pandemic still. It hasn't just magically disappeared. It's still mm-hmm. ongoing. Like, I remember having this conversation with, like, my wife. It's like, hey, should we get tickets to see it? Because a month ago, we were all ready yeah. to go see it in the theater. But, you know, things are happening around. We're like, well, let's be a little bit more cautious.
Mm-hmm. I think I had already planned a few weeks out. We already had tickets. I don't know how much I'll be going. It's going to be hard.
Here's the thing. I was about ready to click buy on mm-hmm. Fandango when we had that conversation. Like, really glad we talked this out.
It's going to be, I'll say this. It's going to be hard for me. Maybe I'll go on like a Wednesday during the day or something. It's going to be hard for me not to go see Free Guy. That's going to be the hard one. Because like a lot of these other ones are coming directly to, like, this was HBO Max. I didn't have to go see it in theaters. And I also saw The Green Knight this past week. But like something like Free Guy that's not going to be coming directly to streaming, I'm going to be like, ooh. So maybe I'll just like do it on my own and catch a matinee or something.
Well, it's like, yes. you know, I'm thinking of stuff coming out. It's like Shang-Chi. It's like,
Mike, this is exactly the point I was trying to yes. make. We're still in a Mike says we're still in a pandemic. This was a day and date release. It's R-rated. The first movie was not well received. There are too many variables to blame this film's failure on one of them. You are absolutely correct. That's the point I was trying to get to. And I think that it's one of those things. There's like, there's no news like bad news. So we're obviously like, and you see it like every, it's so clickbaity where it's like, oh, it's underwhelming, blah, blah, blah. I think Warner Brothers was already tempted. They were tempering their expectations in December when they're like, fuck it. Our whole slate is going to HBO Max. Like yeah. everything. We're not going to do exceptions. Everything's coming out. And I think it probably eased a lot of expectations for them. Their board was probably not like, oh, we have to hit certain numbers and blah, 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 blah. Because if that you started that with Wonder Woman 84, which let's be honest, probably was going to finance the studio for the rest of the year. Once you realize you can't keep sitting on that movie, that's actually going to take us directly into another story we're going to bring up. But once you realize you can't keep sitting on that kind of a movie and you realize you're going to have to bite the bullet, the movies will come back around, the money will come back, then you're not going to like the, I almost guarantee Suicide, they don't care. They don't care no. about these numbers.
Well, I know James Gunn does it because, I mean, he already had a great quote that's out there when they were talking about this. He goes, look, Jaws isn't a success because it was only shown in theaters. It was a, it still holds a high regard because it's on TV screens. Mm-hmm. People still watch it. Like, if it was, here's the thing, because people are still going to be watching The Suicide Squad. I'm betting before it ends its initial run on HBO Max, you're going to watch it again.
Yeah.
I'll probably watch it again.
I mean, yeah, sure, I'll probably
finish everyone who's watching is probably going to watch it again. Of course, exactly. I'm hoping there's someone out there who's really out of spite going, no, I'm not going to watch it now.
Yeah, well, you said yeah, I'm going to watch it. I'm not going to. Watch me not watch it, Eric. Watch me not watch it.
Watch me not watch.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that it just kind of rubs me the wrong way where it's like this narrative doesn't have to be overly negative. Like, but right. You, if you insist on doing that just for the specific clicks, good for you. But
I finally, know, thanks to Maxwell for allowing me not to click on that.
Or me, because I was the one who was talking about it. I mean, I don't know, Mike, you said it's a lack of transparency. I feel like they were pretty upfront with how they were doing it. Like, I mean, obviously all these boardrooms, like you don't get things like that Sony leak of emails from a few years back. Like that doesn't really happen. So there's millions of things that we as a general public will never hear about. But yeah, no, I agree that it was a smart because it gets more eyes on the movie and it creates a lot of goodwill too. So in not creating goodwill news, we do have to talk about the other really big story about comic book movies, which was Scarlett Johansson suing Disney over Black Widow streaming release. Mm-hmm. Now, this is an interesting thing. And I, you know, you have you read up on this? You basically I know have. What's happening. Okay. So just to put things in a nutshell, when Scarlett Johansson, you know, it was in one of those, I'm trying to think of how to sum this up quickly and do it succinctly.
You can basically do it, I believe in you.
All of the Avengers had their contracts renegotiated. I don't remember whether it was after Avengers 1 or 2, but RDJ came to the table and he's like, I'm going to help you guys out. We're going to go back to Disney and like get you all paid more. Robert Downey Jr. out of the MCU. We know that. Again, Scarlett Johansson was killed in Endgame. This was, you know, happened after or before the events. After the events of Civil War.
Yeah, Black Widow takes place after Civil War.
So yeah, after the events of Civil War. And so that's what we get. And we also know this is literally her Marvel swan song. So she had in her contract that she was getting points. Now, for most people who don't know a lot about movies, points is basically like she gets direct gross income from the movie's box office. I would highly doubt that this actually influenced whether or not, like, when they were releasing it, because we had, mm-hmm. what, four different release dates for Black Widow?
Right, they kept pushing it back.
They kept pushing it back because they wanted, you know, they wanted the Marvel money. They wanted $1 billion. They wanted this to get to that infamous 10 figures. I had to think about it.
Math is hard.
I know. Well, counting the digits in a billion is what I was doing in my head really quickly. So basically, she sued because she's still getting a cut of the streaming of that $30 that you pay to rent at home. Mm-hmm. But she sued because the box office, she was receiving less money than it was initially projected. And not to mention, like, it's all her team, too. So, you know, if Scarlett's not getting paid, the rest of her team isn't getting paid. So that's the long and the short of it, with omitting some details that are not here nor there. Now, what are you thinking about this initially? And then I have another point to make.
Well, my opinion has flip-flopped on this. Because at first I'm like, you know what? Good for you, ScarJo. You get out there. You get that $50 million that you recapped.
Okay.
That you've lost from this. But then I read an article from Vanity Fair about this.
Okay.
That went into more details, including things like she is still getting points off the Disney Plus.
Yes.
Part of it. And also, apparently, there was an email between Disney and Marvel discussing this about how this is going to work. So her lawyers don't really have a strong footing to argue, like, you never discussed this. No, there is actually emails between the parties discussing it. Okay. So ScarJo wanted to win the battle of public opinion, which she won hands down, because also I'm not going to congratulate Disney on their responses because they were horrible about the whole thing. But I mean, I get it. Like, we only got one life to live, and you want to make as much as you can during it. So I get it. She wants to try to make as much money off of this as she can because she's not coming back. Mm-hmm. Like, the cash cow's gone.
Swan song. Yep.
So, swan song. So I get it. And, you know, again, like $50 million is a lot of money, regardless of who you are. Right?
Yeah.
But it's just one of those things where it's like, it's the shady side of the business. It's the stuff that people don't really like talking about. But at the same time, as devil's advocate, let's just say they never decided to release it on Disney Plus. How much more do you think she could have gotten? That's the thing. Because, like, I know for sure, at least I know the one target group for the Disney Plus, you know, premium access are families. Families, yeah, of, you know, with kids, it's easier for them to go through Disney Plus than it is to go to the theater. Like, I have
for sure
my buddy Chris from work. He's the prime example. He's the target audience for this. He's got a, he's going to be seven soon. So a 7 year old, and he's got a 3 year old. It is so much easier for him to be able to watch the movies at home than trying to take them all to go see a movie in the theater. Sure. So is it enough? Because here's what's going to go down, because it's probably going to go to arbitration. It's going to go to a judge. It's probably never actually going to go to court. They're probably going to
settle. It'll get settled out of court, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to get settled out of court. Because the question is going to be, how much is that difference going to make between what would happen if you did just a straight theater release versus putting it on Disney Plus? Because the other thing you got to watch is, like, well, I mentioned it earlier, Shang-Chi coming out next month. Yeah,
yeah, next month.
Yeah. How's that going to do? That's not doing a Disney Plus. That's going straight to theater, and yet another, well, cases and everything spiking again.
We'll see. So, and so this is the take I want to put in front of your earballs.
Oh, I love it when you put things in front of my earballs.
Feast your ear tongues on these memory pups. Mm. So essentially this is, and it's funny when you see people like, and like, I know how you were saying you flip-flop, but it's also one of those things that's interesting where it's like, wait, hold on. You are now, say, you're pro Disney, you're pro literally the biggest studio. Like, they could literally write her a check. They don't even, they could go to arbitration. They could use the lawyers, but they could probably write her a check. Be like I was just saying, like, we're talking 10 digits for a billion. They write her a check for mid 8 digits and this all goes away.
Right.
Like, that's the first point, is Disney, you know, it's not just Disney. It's Disney, it's Lucasfilm, it's Marvel, it's Fox. They're all under the same umbrella. Like, Disney is not
right for funds. Like I said, $50 million is a lot for me and you. For ScarJo, yes. Oh, it's a God. Good chunk of change. For Disney, it is literally them going through the couch cushions.
And this is something that might be a small exaggeration, but I appreciate where your head's at. This is something that was brought to, I wish I could remember who first said it, but I will say, honestly, this is an industry in television and film that, unlike real economics, trickle down actually does exist. So when you're seeing an actor who's like, hey, this is a contract, this is what you promised me, I'm not letting you do this, that actually does send ripples, especially people in unions and whatnot. And everyone mm-hmm. who acts pretty much in Hollywood is part of an actor's union. Yep. So, and basically anyone who's ever worked for freelance who doesn't have a team of people like Scarlett Johansson does, anyone who doesn't work freelance, like, when you work freelance, sometimes you really, really, really bank on that money.
Yeah.
So what this is basically saying is, like, Disney can't throw their weight around. And I think not necessarily like she doesn't have a leg to stand on, because I'm sure they will, like you said, they're going to settle somewhere and there will be a conclusion to this. But this is also an actor saying, like, hey, this was our agreement. This is what we were, like, correspondence, however it goes, like, you did not meet our initial agreement. So it's one of those things where it's like, this will help smaller creators in the long run. Like, yes, granted, we're talking about it at the tippy, 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 tippy top of the pyramid, where you're talking about an A-lister, and like, people can be like, oh, doesn't she have enough money? And it's like, yes, but
on see, I'm never going to make that argument, because again, you are what you are worth.
Exactly. But that's the thing, is like, to some degree, this is also a symbolic gesture, and it can be beneficial for all of those who are working with less than her.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things to where it's like, you know, there's definitely more, not, I don't want to say it's like life or death for all actors, but it's saying, like, there's, you know, there's a leg to stand on and be like, hey, you know, you know your worth, and know, like, hey, this is where that line in the sand is. I'm putting my foot
and
down. Like,
also, you got to remember, the industry's going to be changing because of COVID now. So everything's mm-hmm. going to be changing. So
let's talk about another news story with that. Look at us transitioning all over the place. Let me find it first, because basically what you were bringing up is what I'm going to see if it's this one before I get too far. Yes. Okay. So, along those lines, we have heard some really big numbers. You don't know where I'm going with this. I don't know if I said, I think I did send this one to you, but you would have had to have read through the end of the article to get what I was saying.
And also, you're assuming I had time today to do it.
Yeah, right. And that's the thing. I nutshell it anyway, just to, you know, talk about what we're doing. So there was a big splash. This was July 26th when this came out. And this actually came out in the New York Times, I believe, maybe first. Is this technology? Yeah, another. Okay. So basically, the headline for this was Hollywood head spinner, Universal spends big for new Exorcist trilogy. So the subtitle was, the deal expected to be announced this week is for more than $400 million and is a direct response to the streaming giants that are upending the film industry's economics. So the film side of this, which is where it ties into us, and then we'll get into the money side, which is where it ties into everything else we're talking about. But so you have the film, they're basically doing a new Exorcist trilogy. I'm going to nutshell this a little bit.
Yeah, Leslie Odom Jr., I know.
Leslie Odom Jr., I think, is going to be the main character. You're bringing back Ellen Burstyn for the first time since the original Exorcist. She's going to be in it as well. I believe there was, I want to say there was other talent attached to it. Oh, actually, I don't want to say, I don't want to misquote it, but I'm pretty sure. Yeah, David Gordon Green. So David Gordon Green got famous for, I'm pretty sure it was Pineapple Express. I'm pretty sure he directed Pineapple Express, was his first like big feature directing. And now he's been known for the two new Halloween movies that he's done with Blumhouse. And basically, he will direct the new Exorcist films and serve as a screenwriter. Jason Blum is going to be one of the producers as well. So basically, you're getting a big chunk of change for a pretty solid horror creative team.
Yeah.
And this is the first film of the trilogy is expected to arrive in theaters late 2023. And then under the terms of the deal, the second and third films could debut on Peacock, according to someone briefed on the matter. Now, the interesting part of this where it says, I should probably name who actually was the head of this. Donna Langley, the film studio's chairwoman, teamed with Peacock for Universal and the release. And then the streaming, like we were talking about Peacock as well. So Donna Langley. And it says the deal is still private, but it was in the vicinity of the $465 million that Netflix paid for the next two Knives Out movies. So it says, basically, in a business sense, the deal reflects the boldness of Miss Langley, the chairwoman. And she's, I want to nutshell this. So the old model, basically, the cost of the package is so high because Miss Langley and her deal did not play by Hollywood's old economic rules. They took a risk and played by new ones, those used by streaming insurgents like Netflix, Amazon, Apple, to outbid traditional film companies, at least until now. The old model, the one that studios have used for decades to make high-profile film deals, involves paying fees up front and then sharing a portion of the revenue from ticket sales, DVD purchases, and television rerun licensing around the world. The bigger the hit, the bigger the back-end paydays for certain talent partners. Streaming giants has done it differently. And I can tell you this with a little bit of personal experience here in a second. Streaming giants have done it differently. They pay more up front, usually much more, much more, in lieu of any back-end payments, which gives them complete control over the future revenue. This means that talent partners get paid as if their projects are hits before they're released or even made. The risk for the talent is if their projects become monster hits, they do not get a piece of the windfall. So, long story short, a lot of these deals. So think of a movie like Yes Man. I remember reading Yes Man. I think Jim Carrey might have even refused, but I think he might have not had an upfront salary. And he got points on the back end. But I'm pretty sure his points were like, they were something high. I want to say they were over 30%, like 37% of gross.
Yeah.
So, and that movie, I think that movie made like $300 million. Like, I think it was very well received. I could take the time to, or do you have the box office Mojo numbers too or no?
I'm bringing it up right now. Keep talking.
Okay. So, but basically, with him doing that kind of
a deal, it was a budget of $70 million and it made $223 million.
Yeah. And so he had points. So basically, he was getting paid as much as money was coming in. So, especially for someone like me, when you're working as an actor and you have, I'm non-union. So, union, that's a lot of what happens where you hear people talk about residuals and you see these funny checks of people getting like 10 cents, 7 cents, 20 cents. It costing more to mail it than it did for them to get it. But what's happening now is they give you what's called a buyout. So basically a buyout is they write you a check. you have X number of dollars and you get that in lieu of anything else or anything ongoing. So the only difference being, depending on how the contract is structured, they might have to pay you again, depending on if you've signed in perpetuity or if you've only signed for a year, 2 years, whatever. So what's happening now is all the money's being coming up front, because a lot of these streaming services, they might get new subscribers, but like, it's just the money keeps coming in because you keep paying for the service. It's not like going spiking up and down like a box office. So that's where the money is changed, as opposed to coming in on the end. Now it's coming in up front. Sorry, I feel like that was more of a lecture than a conversation starter.
Here ends your TED Talk.
Thank you for coming to my TED Talk about money is changing the industry.
Right, so Netflix, you know, they paid $400 million for two movies.
$465 million.
Wow. Yep. So let me bring up Knives Out's numbers really quick.
It was in the article that I was just reading from. It's the only reason I know it that quickly.
Okay, so Knives Out, budget of $40 million, made $311 million. So again, if we're going to traditional, that's still a huge, you know, that's traditional. So what Netflix is betting on is, so we'll give them $200 million
per movie,
per movie, more or less, just, you know, because that's what we're banking on, is, you know, cost 40 to 60 to make, and we'll keep everything else.
Mike, they sure did. They paid that much for two sequels.
Because if it was traditional, again, we're assuming that Knives Out 2 would make, you know, an extra $100 million more than the first one. But again, that's assuming things under the old model. But yeah, again, it's like Netflix has, you know, the movies that made us, a fun little documentary series. He talked about Forrest Gump, where the production company Paramount didn't want to pay a certain amount, so Robert Zemeckis and Tom Hanks kept giving up their money for doing that to get more back end stuff. So a movie that cost $60 million and I'm grossing over, I think, what, $400 million at that time. Tom Hanks literally became Tom Banks after that.
Yeah,
he went around and bought banks. He's like,
I'm Tom Banks, bitch. And that's a movie that, you know, you're talking $400 million in 1994 dollars.
Right.
Yeah, that's, you know, probably closer to eight nowadays. Something else I was going to say, and I lost it.
You know, it's changing. So, like, I totally understand, you know, ScarJo's fight for, you know, she wants to get that money. Mm-hmm. But also, it's just weird because it's like me and one of my coworkers, Jeff, used to talk about this all the time, where it's just like COVID has sped up how the movies are going to be working by probably 10 years.
Probably. Yeah. They literally, you had to rush streaming services coming out. You know what? Fuck it. This was one of my back end stories, to see if we got to it, but I'm just going to jump to it. Well, real quick. So you said streaming up the industry. Did you, and before we go too far, so thoughts about a 3-picture Exorcist deal, 1 to theaters, possibly 2 to Peacock?
Well, I mean, the first one's such a classic. So, I mean,
I've heard the third one is also amazing. Like,
because I never watched the sequels, second or third. Because I heard second one is bad, third one is good, but
that's pretty much for that.
But again, one of those things where it's like, okay.
I'm
one of those guys, like, you could spend $400 million on a Morgan original trilogy, but hey, you're also paying for the name. I get it.
Exactly. Well, and everything is old is new again, so that's one of the things we're definitely in the middle of.
I know, I can't wait till, you know, Netflix buys out Ramblin' About Movies.
We'll sell it for a handshake and two ham sandwiches from Subway for each of us.
Agree to this deal. Dan, you can take those ham sandwiches. I will take the upfront money.
4 ham sandwiches? Yes.
Yay!
4
is better than 2.
Kind of in what you were saying, I'm going to jump to something that, and this will be really quick, because it was something I saw where it was just, so Vudu and Fandango Now will merge into a single rebranded service on Roku.
Okay.
So you're talking about, like, I don't know if HBO Max was, like, intended to be released the way it was, but like you can say COVID definitely accelerated it. So now everyone's kind of scrambling to like find new ways to get
stuff out to people. At CBS All Access became Paramount Plus because of this.
Pretty much.
I mean, granted, I have all of them, it seems like, in terms of streaming services.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing too. It's so I would say the one thing that something like that has going for it, like Vudu and Fandango now coming together, is like Vudu was, they were pretty high on rentals or like pretty high on like
recent the digital copies. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's got that going for them, which is nice. And I mean, Shrug, that was kind of just the story that I think that will happen eventually. There was another story I was going to go over if Max was here. I just thought it was interesting that Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist got picked up by Roku, which I thought
for
was
a holiday special.
Yeah, they're getting a holiday special and they're gonna see where it goes from there. Cause like
Roku, I mean, that's the other weird thing too. It's like all these like shows that are getting canceled can get picked up by another streaming service somewhere for to do whatever. Like,
and it's so that's
Manifest funny last three seasons on NBC is getting canceled, and now there's like talks of it being on Netflix for a movie. All I'm saying is there's a certain show that we like, Dan, that's got its six seasons. Where's our GD movie?
I would say, well, that's the joke I was going to make, was that because it's a widely known secret that Community bankrupted Yahoo Screen, which is why there's no Yahoo streaming service, because $30 million is what it cost to do that last season, and that was all their money. So it's, and that's the thing, is I think things were starting to align, especially like early to mid pandemic when we did our Community special. And you know, especially trying to get those creative people back in that you talk about, think about where certain people were at the beginning of Community and where they are now.
Yes.
When you're talking about Dan Harmon doing however many, like 20 seasons of Rick and Morty, you're talking about the Russo brothers doing whatever they want with all their Marvel money. You talk about Donald Glover.
They did Cherry, and they decided to do whatever they wanted in that film.
Which I had two auditions for and I didn't get either one.
Now I have more reason not to like it. I'm going to lower its letter grade in my mind right now.
There you go. Take that. That's thanks. Thanks, man. I wasn't asking for that, but okay. I did see them on set in Captain America 2 because I was an extra. So that was fun. But that was just a little bit of a story. I saw your
calf.
Yes. Yeah. You saw blurry me. I should really screenshot that. I should put it on my computer. Screenshot it.
How many points did you get in your back end?
Phrasing? But also, none, no points. I got paid a flat rate because I was an extra, and I lied to Marvel. Thanks for hiring me anyway, Marvel. That shows I'm an actor.
I was going to say, let's be honest, all actors lie on their resume.
Oh God. Yeah. It was, and I'll go through, I've told this story before.
I speak again. Perfect Turkish. What are you talking about?
Perfect Turkish. Hi. Speaking of perfect Turkish, I have a friend. Oh, you have something by your butt, don't you? This is Finn. Hi. You want to say hi, Finn? He looks very nonplussed to be on camera. All right, Finn. I got to talk more movie stuff. The phone call when Marvel called me for extra casting, they were like, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being a professional, how good are you at basketball? And I didn't even blink. Yeah, thanks, Mike. I didn't even blink. I was like, I'm like a 7. I hadn't played basketball in any kind of organized capacity since I was in fifth grade.
Hey, at least you didn't go like, oh, no, I could have been the next LeBron, but, you know, knee injury.
Well, that's why I was saying you go with a safe number. I could.
Right.
And that's I had another interview for an agency and they were asking like special skills. And I'm like, I'm athletic enough to make any sport look good on camera is literally what I told them. And I have confidence in that. Yeah, I can totally do that.
I have confidence in you.
Yeah. All right. Let's get back to more movie news because there's a bunch of shit I have. We're not going to get to all this. No. I'll try to get to what we can. This is a bit of an older story. It's about a month old, but I thought it was so much goddamn fun. I wanted to talk about it anyway. The next Star Trek film, I don't know if you saw this or not. The Kelvin timeline is alive and well.
Yes.
Being brought to us by Matt Shackman, who directed all of WandaVision. And I'm just... Yay. Who had previously had directed... He was a very big, very... Not well-known, but a good journeyman television director. He directed... Because, yeah, he directed episodes of The Great. He directed It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Fargo, Game of Thrones, Psych. Like,
he, and also, he was a former child actor, too, so that helps out, too.
Was he? I didn't know that.
Well, that's what he said in his interview during WandaVision.
Oh, I didn't watch the behind-the-scenes thing.
Yeah, very, I did.
Good. But, yeah, I'm just... That makes me... to see how well-crafted, and especially how... Think about that as a channel, like from an acting and a directing point of view. And like everything about WandaVision is, I get goosebumps thinking about it just because I'm like, it's such a interesting scenario where, especially in the first few episodes, you're talking, what, 5 or 6 episodes where they were themed by decade.
Yep.
Like, not only do you have to do that as an actor, you have to do the production, everything. And so you have to be able to direct differently in all of them. That's like, those are, let me put, I'm trying to think of a good way to put it, for a creative point of view, when you're training or when you're taking acting classes or any kind of classes, that's what they tell you to do. They go over everything, even though if it's like, I have a buddy who literally is, he has red hair, big beard, and he's just perpetually cast as a Viking or heavy for something. And it's like, so if he did acting classes, he probably knows how to act like a 70-year-old grandma, but because of his look, he is typecast always. So when you get something like this, like WandaVision, it's just like, we're going to stretch all of you, like,
yeah, should, everything.
Yeah, Elizabeth Olsen should get an Emmy just because of how good she was in every episode, which is sad because typically they only nominate you for one episode, but they should get all of them. So hearing Shackman getting the Kelvin timeline, which is something that's been like on and off again, and like, I know we're both big fans of.
So we are.
That's, yeah. I'm very, I don't know if they're still going to do the script that had, that they're bringing Hemsworth back. Cause I think that might be too expensive at this point to have both Chris's, but I mean,
well, we can always have our fan film of Too Many Chris's where we get all the Chris's together and we take our shirts off and wrestle.
Is this a fan film or are you just writing a softcore porn?
I'm just saying, we'll make money.
Oh, God, yeah, of course it would make money.
And you know what? We'll take points in the front and the back end.
Sorry, I'm trying not, yeah, I'm trying not to make too many, you know, sexual jokes with you saying front and the back end, but it's hard. It's really hard.
Oh, come on, that was,
that's so cheating. Hard. It's so hard. All right, moving on. I don't even know how to pronounce this guy's name. The
original Brandon lead... Fraser. Oh, sorry.
Oh, we can do that one.
It's yay! Because I'm just so happy for him.
Brandon Fraser. We're in the middle of a Frajanaissance.
We had the McConaissance earlier.
Yeah. Now we're having the Frajanaissance. So he's joined not only Martin Scorsese's Killers of the Flower Moon, but also a comedy called Brothers. Max Barbakov's Brothers. And so everyone knows Scorsese is doing Flowers of the Killer Moon, and that one has Leonardo DiCaprio and Robert De Niro and Jesse Plemons as the, you know, main guy. So that's going to be a whole lot of fun. And then the other one is,
oh, Mike, that's the perfect name. Look at the chat.
The Renaissance. Nice. Thank you, Mike. But here is, I did not know this until I read it. I missed this earlier when I read the article. But the latter project adding Fraser to its cast is a comedy from Palm Springs director Barbakov. Barkabow. I'm sorry, I've been mispronouncing that. Which is currently in production in Atlanta. So he sounds like he's going to be doing that one first. The logline is being kept under wraps, but Fraser will star alongside Peter Dinklage, Josh Brolin, and Glenn Close. And that's a comedy, so that's going to be a lot of fun.
Did you watch his Soderbergh film that's on HBO Max?
No Sudden Move?
Yeah, No Sudden Move.
I did not. I need to. How was it?
He was great in it. My problem with the movie is I don't think there was enough for the third act because it literally felt like it was spinning its wheels towards the end. But no, like Brandon Fraser plays like this mob heavy guy, like he's not the top guy, but he's like up there in rankings. And because it's Brandon Fraser, how can you be happy for him?
Oh, I know. It's just, I'm happy to see he's going. And like,
well, I tweeted this earlier. There's actually a video where like he's talking to someone about, you know, how he got the movie with Scorsese, and you know, he's like all nervous about it, and he's old. The interviewer's like, well, just so you know, everyone on the internet is so excited for you, and we all love you, and we're here to support you. And you see him, like, fighting back the tears. I'm just like...
We don't deserve him.
No, we don't.
Brendan Fraser. All right. The other thing I was going to talk about is I don't know how to pronounce the guy from Bridgerton's name. Roger Jean Page?
Something like that.
But basically, there were rumors that he was going to be the next Bond. And then they went ahead and announced that he's going to be rebooting The Saint.
Ooh.
Oh, you didn't hear this?
Well, no, I heard about the Bond. I didn't know he got The Saint, because I remember we talked about The Saint, because I think there was going to, at one point, Chris Pine was going to be doing it.
I mean, Chris Pine would have been good. Let me see.
Because I know we played our fair game. Let's rank the Chris's in this role. To which Chris Pratt was last.
Yeah. Here, you can see, I'll show you real quick, and then everyone can see all, not my notes, but you can see how many different things I have coming up. But he tweeted out this, which is from the original series.
Oh!
Yep.
That's awesome. Now, yeah. I haven't watched his series on Netflix. I actually watched his SNL episode, which he was shockingly good in that.
Good.
For me not knowing anything about it, I was like, this guy's got some... He's got some natural charisma.
Right. I was going to say the only thing I was looking for. Okay, it is going to be a movie. That's the only thing I wanted to double check to make sure it wasn't like a direct streaming or series. Yeah. So it looks like it's going to be a movie. And I'm not going to lie. I love The Saint with Val Kilmer. That's like one of those movies that hit me like right at the right time. I remember having like arguments with friends of mine as a kid, like, who had the cooler tech gadget? Was it The Saint's pocket knife or was it Pierce Brosnan's Bond watch? I remember having that argument vividly as a kid.
My whole thing was, I felt like The Saint was like a fever dream when I was a kid, because I was like the only person I knew who saw it. So I was like, does this movie actually exist? I know I saw it.
That's, I feel like that homework for us, we need to watch Val. I think it's on Amazon Studios now. I've heard nothing but fantastic things about it.
All right, we're watching it this weekend, buddy.
Yeah, oh, Val. I've got some time. I might watch it sooner because my weekend is weird. Well, I'm in my weekend.
I know right my weekend's shy too, but accountability.
Yes. Yes. Watch Val. We'll watch Val.
We'll watch Val.
So we'll that was just the cool thing. Like, you know, he's going to be doing the same. I'm excited. Awesome. Like, it has some other, I don't know, topic. Like, it's being produced by.
Who ever knows if we're ever going to get another. Like, I know there's one ready to go out, but who knows if that's ever going
to
get.
Oh, ready. No Time to Die? It's in November, right? I think it's for sure November or October. It's one of those 2 months.
It was supposed to be Thanksgiving, yeah. But, I mean, it's owned by Amazon now.
You're not wrong, Tim. This was a true thing. Roger Moore was the Saint before he was Bond.
That's true. Thank you,
Tim. But, I mean.
It's actually the Saint that got him Bond.
It's also interesting because, like, it's. If you even just look at Mr. Jean Page, because I that's the first part of his name I don't know how to pronounce. He looks much more like the older versions of Bond, who are much more like debonair, much more suave. Like, and now we got Daniel Craig, like he's in the shit.
Right.
Like in the first movie, he gets tortured by getting his balls whipped. Like,
yeah,
they go hard.
My mom did not buy him as Bond when he would like even that first trailer, like when he's coming out.
Everyone, though, it was there, you know, maybe she was
like,
it was.
He looks like he gets punched in the face a lot. I don't like.
your mom sounds like a fifth grader who had their lunch stolen.
I don't like it.
I don't like it.
And that's the thing is like, we'll do a special at one point where it's like, castings that were originally frowned upon or not received well, like Keaton is Batman or Ledger is the Joker or Daniel Craig is Bond, that ultimately y'all look foolish.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe at some point we'll do one of those, but we have too much other
after we watch, with. Robert Pattinson's Batman movie.
We'll see. We shall
just
see.
So mean you could get our cake and just be like, oh, so internet, remember when you were so mad about this?
And we're eating it.
We're eating this cake.
So I've kind of jumped all around. I'm excited for this. So I think we talked about Taika Waititi has a Flash Gordon movie coming.
Mm-hmm.
And it was animated. It is no longer animated. It is now a live action film, which he is writing. There's some head nodding.
No, I like Taika Waititi. I like Flash Gordon. I mean, watch Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah.
But it's just, I think the movie would have worked better in the meaning of animation as opposed to live action.
If it was a different director, I might agree with you.
But I know it's Taika Waititi. I mean, yeah, again, he's someone who
I'm buying
yet to prove us wrong.
Yeah. I'm 100%.
I'm not in the room where they're having this discussion because I'm not sure at all. Like, Taika's in there. He's like, man, we need to do this live action. So he's like, I don't know. He's like, I'm motherfucking Taika Waititi. Look at this Oscar.
Well, he's also, Mike's with you. Mike says he's disappointed by the news because he was looking to see an animated take on the material.
Yeah, I think it would have been cool. But again, we're not in the studio because like the studio could have been the ones going up to Taika's like, hey, Taika, it's not going to work in animation. We need to see you do this live action. I mean, you're Taika motherfucking Waititi. Come on, man.
Put some respect on his name.
Right, and you like edit a zero. Like, come on.
Yeah, well, sure.
Like, no, two zeros. One to his paycheck and one to the budget.
Yes. That was the other thing. So when we were doing the studio tour, he's also the HBO Max series that he's in, which is a dark comedy where he plays Blackbeard and is called Our Flag Means Death. So that was being filmed. Well, we went on a Sunday, so not a lot was happening.
Yeah, I was gonna
that news made me excited.
I know. I'm just imagining going on that tour, you know, with the, you know, you're like, oh, I'm here for my friends. All of a sudden, well, here's Taika Waititi filming his new series of HBO Max. And Dan goes,
I would have definitely scooted all the way out of frame.
So, Mr. Waititi, here's my headshot. Thank you very much. And then security would kindly wheel you back in.
Yeah, right. Well, it was for my own safety that we went on a Sunday. My own safety. We'll do tiny bit of bad news because this movie is coming out and I actually had questions.
Ohio about man it. Burns down Warner Brothers live because he was not given a coffee chat with Taika Waititi.
I'm no longer an Ohio man. No longer an Ohio man. We're coming up a year of me being in California, me and the wife being in California. So
yeah, but you still got the Save the Crew shirt on.
Of course I do. I still have Save the Crew shirt on. I still have Columbus up in the corner. Like, I know where I came from.
Yeah, but what's your driver's license say?
California. I had to have it changed for my first job I had when I was out here.
Oh, that's right, the delivery job.
Yep. So anyway, this is a little bit of sad news. So I read through it, and if you have questions I can tell you, but so I noticed in Jackass Forever Bam's not in it. So this headline was Bam Margera sues Johnny Knoxville and Jeff Tremaine for allegedly wrongfully firing him from Jackass Forever. I need PJ for this one because you were just right. Not.
I'm sorry.
You were nonplussed about Jackass.
I've never watched any of the movies. I stopped watching them when they did the vomit omelet. I was like, that's it. I'm done.
I'm out.
I literally packed a suitcase and.
Well, I'll wrap it up quick because we don't have much to talk about. But it says, and this is why I was curious when Bam was in the trailer, and it says, this suit comes after Jeff Tremaine obtained a 3-year restraining order on Bam Margera. And then it said, the restraining order came out because Bam had sent text to Tremaine, who's the director of the series, who allegedly sent text to the director threatening to harm him and his children after he was fired from Jackass Forever. So there was, yeah, and this is honestly like, I'm with Tim on this. It says Bam is a mess. He really needs to get actual help for himself. He's been a mess since Ryan died. And I think, I don't know if it's been since he was more of a fan of Inara. I'm doing a show. Stop scratching.
Nora don't give a shit.
She doesn't give a shit. I don't know how well you can hear. Probably kind of well. That's fair. Yeah. And that's what I was just saying, Tim. But essentially, yeah, he was actually in the movie. He's been a mess. I remember watching a couple years ago, like, he was on Dr. Phil with his wife, and they were doing, like, marriage counseling from Dr. Phil, and it was uncomfortable. I'll put it that way. Yeah, no, it was rough. And then, like, it goes into it where it was, like, so apparently Margera says he had to sign a wellness agreement to allow him to do the movie, where he had to blow into a breathalyzer 3 times a day, submit to a urinalysis twice a week, and have his hair follicles tested on a regular basis, and take pills every morning while on a FaceTime call with a doctor hired by Paramount. And yeah, it's wow. It's one of those things, like, that seems excessive, but like he's like, apparently it's been that bad. And it was prior to the lawsuit. Yeah. And then he's very much playing the victim. But that's, and this is where I was going to, Tim. Tim says it'll be weird without Bam for sure, but if he can't stay clean, they got to move on. Steve has been clean, and I'm sure he doesn't want to be around that now. But also, Tim, to tie that into what you were saying, Steve-O left a comment noting the director and co-star were looking out for his health. And Steve-O said, quote, Bam, the two people you're saying wronged you are the same two who organized the intervention which saved my life. Everyone bent over backwards to get you in the movie, and all you had to do was not get loaded. You've continued to get loaded. It's that simple. We all love you every bit as much as we all say we do, but nobody who really loves you can enable or encourage you to stay sick. So basically, like, for a little bit of backstory, Steve-O...
Yeah, I remember he was a huge wreck.
He was a huge wreck, and that was for the series and the first two movies. And then, fun fact, though, he is clean in the third movie. He is a sober individual, and he's been sober since. So he, and you can tell, like, he looks better. He's, like, looks a lot healthier, like, going on. But so it's interesting when you, like, when you have people, and that's, I think, there's a special. I never saw the special, but I know there was a special, like, Steve-O's intervention, where it was, like, Knoxville, and, like, everybody, like, and Steve-O said that. He's, like, when Johnny Knoxville comes up to you and goes, hey, you need to slow down. Like, he goes, oh, fuck. So, and I agree with Tim that it's going to be a little weird without Bam, but it's also like he's not been, it looks like he's been taking everything really well. So I hope he does. Like, it's kind of a wake up call, but and you know, to not even say devil's advocate, but like from a Paramount point of view. Yeah. Like, who do you think is harder doing? Yeah. He's a liability. And especially on a movie, like they're doing what they're doing, where there's, I'm not exaggerating, a risk of death, depending on whatever stunt they're trying to perform.
Whatever they're doing, there's a chance to do a lot of harm to others and yourself, and you need to be able to trust whoever you're doing. Like, if me and you were doing a Jackass-like show, we could do it because we trust each other. But if I started hitting the bottle hard, it, you know, started doing drugs, I would expect you to dump me and force me into rehab, because that's what friends do.
Yes. Let's not forget that this is these movies, they're owned by Paramount. You know what else Paramount makes?
Money.
The Mission Impossible movies.
Oh yeah, that's
it. You know why the Mission Impossible movies are so hard to get financed? Because the insurance is through the roof, because yes. Tom Cruise insists on doing most of his own stunts. So it's a very similar conversation, to where it's like, it's a little different on a Jackass movie, because it's like, if one of them gets injured, you got a bunch of other players who can come in and do other random shit.
But there's only one Tom Cruise.
They had to shut down production for, I think it was 6 weeks when he
broke his ankle.
He broke his ankle. He didn't just sprain it. He broke it.
And you can still see it in the movie.
It, you know, I know why they left it in the movie. It really disrupts the flow. Like, it's like, they leave it in there. Yeah, you're
one of those things. Like, I want to see the pie of the line graph of like the insurance costs for the Mission Impossible movies as
go going.
Yeah, as he's getting older, at like some point, there's just, it's just like, sounds like going, dear God, stop.
Tim, I'm with you. The snake pranks are funny, and then for a number of different reasons, like I like Ape and Phil, like they seem like genuinely good people. So I really, and that's, we'll wrap up the Jackass part, where it's like, bam, we really hope you get the help you need. Like, no one out here is against you. Everyone loves you, but everyone just sees what's happening. You know what I mean? Like, you got to calm down. You got to take a step back, and you got to really evaluate things and like heal. This is, I like going into 2020 and 2021. It's like, focus on mental health. And like, that's, you gotta get through things, and you gotta be okay to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Let's go to the opposite end of the spectrum and talk about something really happy. I don't know how many more of these things we're going to, I have to ask some of these because we're already going over an hour and 15 minutes, but
let's just say whatever the next one is the last one.
I might
not know, this one that you're doing, the one after.
No, cause there might be one or two more I have to talk about. I can drop some though. Because this one's kind of short. They have not an origin story, but they were doing a new take on the Addams Family.
Oh yeah. Where, and so, it's like a Wednesday goes to college.
Yeah, or she's at like a school for gifted or something. Like, yeah. I don't. Yeah, so something like that.
It's Adam's Jenna Family Ortega. X-Men.
Yeah. So Jenna Ortega was cast as Wednesday yep. Adams. And now, I don't know if you saw this or no.
Oh, I saw both.
I saw it too. So she has parents played by, first off, it's me, Luis Guzman.
Man, I used to get laid all the time.
And Catherine Zeta-Jones. So,
not Catherine, Alpha Jones.
No. Zeta. So, can I help you? Now the cat's opening the door. Inara,
I thought she was coming in there.
They're going to play. Let's watch. Let's not watch because then it's going to make for terrible TV. Although they might actually start wrestling. So that would be kind of funny. But yeah, this casting. Great casting.
Oh, great casting. I'm more excited for Luis Guzman. Because the whole, Mr. Adams, I forget the character's first name, but like just to play Gomez, just so suave, so debonair.
I really want to see that too.
Right, coming out of Luis Guzman, I want to see that so hard because he's always comic relief. Mm-hmm. So just to see him just be able to come in and just like smooth talk,
yep.
Catherine Zeta-Jones is just like, yeah.
Yep, I like that, especially because it's going to be too a Netflix original, which is going to be a lot of fun.
So it'll be an hour each episode, and they'll have three extra episodes that really won't be needed.
But that'll definitely be a lot of fun. There's also there's the issue of with the last time we talked about Adam's Family News, it was for the animated one, and we were both really disgruntled that we weren't getting Oscar Isaac and I can see her face, Eva Green.
Yeah,
and we weren't getting them in a live action. But I'll take these two in live action. Definitely. Yeah, so that's gonna be a lot of fun. All right, so there's that.
I'm gonna think about it. Like, we got Oscar Isaac, who could easily play Gomez in his sleep.
Yeah,
and I got Luis Guzman doing it. I want to see the mustache.
Yeah, a quick one. They added Antonio Banderas to Indy 5. I think that's both a yes from us. So yep. Super. We'll try to go through some of these really quick. I can exit out of that one. The scare with Bob Odenkirk, and now everyone's happy he's doing better and having a baby heart attack.
That was a very stressful 24 hours, I thought.
Yeah.
For the collective internet.
Yes, exactly.
Like, people are like, we want an update.
All right. We can do this. We can, because there's a tiny bit more. They announced, so I do want to talk about Matthew Vaughn's next movie called Argyle. Because the cast is ridiculous. And then there was a baby update. So it was announced on July 8th. The cast is, I'm going to read it just straight through. For Matthew Vaughn's Argyle, it's a new spy. They're trying to do, I think they say they're going to reinvent the spy genre. So who knows what that means. But the cast is Henry Cavill, Sam Rockwell, Bryce Dallas Howard, Bryan Cranston, Dua Lipa, Samuel L. Jackson, John Cena, and Catherine O'Hara. We signed up yesterday. Like, where and when are we seeing this? And then the update to it was that it is close to a $200 million deal, like we talked about earlier, with Apple TV. So most likely this will be going to Apple TV.
You mean TED TV?
TED TV, exactly.
TED Lasso TV.
As you can tell by your shirt. But yeah, it's just yes to all of those things, and we're very happy about it. And we can't wait to see it. And hopefully, and also it told me in here, Kingsman is set to release in December?
Sure.
December 22nd. That got pushed a bunch too. So
I remember when they were going to make that, like this Kingsman was going to be a movie to see in the theaters. It'll be the first one to watch during the pandemic. I'm like,
the Kingsman? Yeah.
Nope. Not a chance in hell.
And we talked about that because that would be a really good one to test the water for the streaming services. And it's gotten pushed over a year and a half down the road, which is sad. Okay. All right. The only other ones were Hollywood's and Screen Actors Guilds and Directors Guilds and even Amazon Studios and some of Netflix making vaccinations mandatory to work. So that's good. And then I want to do one where we'll wrap up. Because we already said earlier, just go get vaccinated. It's the right thing to do. But the last thing I want to talk about, not movie, more TV, but I want to say this rubbed me the wrong way. And I honestly don't even like care that much about this news, but whoever the hell Mike Richards is in advanced negotiations to become the permanent host of Jeopardy.
Yeah, no,
yeah, bleep yeah. that. I wanted to talk about that because it's like, and basically he's been an executive producer for a year or so, and I guess they said he used to host Divided or The Pyramid, which on Game Show Network, so good for you. I'm not mad about that. But the list of guest hosts that they had that they were passing over for the permanent job was Maya Bialik of Blossom. And
she was Big amazing as a host.
A literal astrophysicist. Like, yes. She has a doctorate. I think I want to say an astrophysicist. Let me, hold on. I can Google that.
It's not astrophysics. It's in mathematics.
No, is it in mathematics? Let me look.
No, that's the woman from Wonder Years I'm thinking of.
Joe, she played a neuroscientist. Let me see what her education was. Wikipedia, tell me all the things. No, that's what she played on Big Bang Theory. Yeah, she's a neuroscientist.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, like her field is neuroscience, like crazy. She has a thesis you can click on here on her Wikipedia, and it was from 2007, like crazy. So Maya Bialik, these were just the guest hosts. Maya Bialik, Anderson Cooper, Katie Couric, Bill Whitaker, Dr. Oz,
man.
Ken Jennings, George Stephanopoulos, Robin Roberts, LeVar Burton, Savannah Guthrie, Dr. Sanjay Gupta, Aaron Rodgers, and Buzzy Cohen. Like, it's just you. And they talked about who, I think they said Jennings was in the running too, and Maya Bialik was as well. Like, it's especially when, and I know that it was like a fan thing to get LeVar Burton on there too. So,
yeah,
I don't know. Like, you looking at the photo of the guy, like, you have an opportunity to do something different, and it's just kind of, it was sad, and nobody knows who this guy is.
Well, not only that, you can also Google his name, and you can read the articles about his, misconduct during his time at The Price is Right with some of the models. So,
oh no, ew, yeah, double down on that. No, yeah, no, hard no.
No, I mean, the obvious choice is LeVar Burton.
LeVar Burton or my
obviously,
Bialik. Obviously, yeah.
But I mean, I'd settle with Aaron Rodgers. I mean,
yeah, of course you would. You just want him out of Green Bay. It'll happen next year. You have your year of tune up with
yeah, I'll be fine.
Dan with that. Campbell,
Dan Campbell, baby, Dan Campbell, okay. MCDC. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Ooh. But no, it's
2 40-ounce coffees, 2 shots of espresso.
Yeah. No, it's one of those things like. It's the joke in Arrested Development, you know, where it says like dead pigeon on the bag.
Yeah, I don't know what I expected.
Don't know. This is exactly it. It's literally the producer of the show going to the producers at Sony, going, you know, who I think would make a great host.
Me. Yeah, I didn't know he had allegations. So yeah, we'll give a thumbs down. A ramble on thumbs down to that.
Double boo, boo that man.
Boo.
It's final, like it isn't official yet, so you know,
advanced negotiations, so we'll see what happens.
But again, it's just, you know, the weakest of sauce. It's just like, hey Alex, you had a great legacy, everyone loved you, we're gonna put some dipshit as your new host.
Yeah
the guy to replace you, RIP. Now let's get this guy who does things wrong in a way that the fans aren't happy about.
Well, that's a lovely note for us to end on.
Nah. Here you go. Here's some
Ruby.
Here's some
positivity. I'm out of cats. No cats for me.
And your wife walked by in the background.
I saw. Yeah, because the cat opened the door. But yeah, that was.
Or was it a ghost?
Oh.
Stay tuned for the next episode to find out.
And end scene. No, but, you know, as always, thank you very much. We appreciate everybody spending time with us on a random Monday when we just decided it would be a good time to do a show. So, yeah. Over there on the internet is Clever Eric Mahler.
And over there on the internet, I'm like...
There it is. Found it.
That it way only, on the internet.
My hand was already here, which is the only reason I was able to do it quickly. Yep. Like,
that's a thing.
We didn't make any jokes about off the rails because our show is never on the rails. So it's very fitting that, like,
right. I just assumed after acquiring us,
we knocked the Pajukan so far off the rails that they had to change the name. We'll take credit for that. Like, it's just no longer off the rails network. Find us on various social media. there's all the things you can click on the bottom. I have to redo the YouTube tag, so but you can find us at the stuff and the places. Thanks
this
for
this tag's gonna stay the same. The one
right above. Oh yeah, we'll still be the same. Yeah, but yeah, thanks very much everyone for hanging out. And as always, rabble on.
Anchors away.